So, hello, and welcome to episode 2 of A Marvelous Lunch Break.
Zing!
Yay.
If the title was different in episode 1, that wasn't my fault, but it was me that said it wrong, so...
Things change,
ideas get better, much like the Marvel Universe.
Actors who play the Hulk also change.
Actors who play many characters also change. Joining me again today, we've got Anna. Hello.
Hello.
Anything else to say?
No, I've got so many thoughts. I'm just going to hold them.
Okay.
Just gonna hold on to
I'll let you. I can tell that you're both ready to burst. Joining me also, Martin Carter.
Hello.
How are you?
I've been thinking about this intro for a long time. It's a good job it's lunchtime because you won't like me when I'm hungry.
So you're also appropriately wearing green.
I am wearing green as well.
I've embodied
the Hulk.
I went for a little red number. I was feeling a little...
somber.
A little somber.
About this film.
Because I started watching this movie at 11:30 last night.
Wow.
And boy, did it keep me awake.
It's in a feel of rage.
I was angry. I was monitoring my heart rate because I was wondering whether it'd go over 200, and I had a little bit of secret gamma inside of me. But it was a doozy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can crack on with it thick and fast. But just initial thoughts going into this, how long was it since you'd last seen the Hulk?
You know, after having watched it, I now have some suspicions that I have never seen it all the way through. Like, there were some bits that I definitely remembered, and some bits I didn't remember any of the last third at all. And I'm also now aware that I 100% mixed in some of the Ang Lee memories into what I thought was in this film. So that, I mean, I can't say then, though, that meant that this was a pleasant surprise, because that would be untrue. However, I am going to say that it was not as bad as I had, like, built it up into my mind to be. Didn't love it, but it was not as bad as I thought. I thought I was in for.
And I've never seen it, so this is my first brand new experience of it. And yeah, I didn't hate it. Mm. I have so many questions for both of you about so many things. It did remind me of those kind of really early Spider-Man films where...
Tobey Maguire's.
The Tobey Maguire ones where you'd go in, you'd watch people smash up a city against essentially a similar version to the hero, you know, the anti-hero to the hero, and it was fine. Do you know what I mean? Like, my whole feeling towards this film is just a bit... It was all right.
So when this movie came out, the tagline was, "This summer, our only hope is something incredible." And I don't feel like my hopes in this movie were... I was not at risk in this movie. You know what I mean? Like, you look at some other Marvel films and you're like, this could have massively affected me if this had not been contained.
Yeah.
But...
No.
There was nothing to do with...
And even,
with...
like, the copywriting of the tagline is terrible. Which is, like, just shows how much effort people are putting in across the board here. I think what it is important to say at this moment is that both this and Iron Man were filmed at the same time.
Yeah, that's
so then, so we shouldn't necessarily expect an evolution in terms of, you know, why was Iron Man so great and the Hulk wasn't so great, because it wasn't actually chronological. So I think that's important to put out there as well.
Yeah, but I think definitely... time and the, you know, the way that the Marvel Universe has evolved has not done this movie any favors. I think probably it's going to get a lot of... We're already setting a tone that this isn't a movie that we necessarily like, but I think at the time it was probably a little bit better than we're going to, you know.
Yeah,
we're looking at. I'm trying to find what the opposite of a rose tinted glasses is.
Green.
Poo brown tinted glasses. It was not enjoyable. So the movie starts off, and we have probably last week we spoke a lot about montages, and you proclaimed your love for montages. The first, I don't know, it felt like 10 minutes of the movie was a big montage. How did you feel about it?
Oh, this was so funny to me, because definitely as I was watching it, I was like, no, my montage love. It was just really bleh. Like, it was, I mean, I understood what they were trying to do, because this wasn't an origin story as well, which, you know, is unique to well, from what we had just seen with Iron Man and everything. So I completely sympathized for what they needed to accomplish in those first few minutes. And I think just from a sheer, like, technical standpoint, they did what they needed to do. They got the basic hit points in there. But there was just something so, like, off about it for me. I think the difficulty, you had Iron Man where you already had some investment in these characters, so you didn't need to kind of be, you know, engaged with him in the same way when he was just, you know, tinkering around, putting things together. You already trusted him, you already knew what he was about. Whereas in this opening montage, it was just face, bit of gamma radiation, like, weird music, which I think came from, like, the very original Hulk. There was, like, so many, like, kind of callbacks to old Hulk, which we'll get into as well. So, yeah, this, it hasn't completely destroyed my love of montages. This will probably rate as, I mean, I'm going to be keeping my own running score of my favorite montages in the MCU universe, and this might be the floor that none of them can fall below.
I think my personal favorite moment is just where the green target comes over his head and he looks at the camera and winks. I was like,
oh,
what are you doing? That, it just felt so out of character that, like, looking back now, if it was the Mark Ruffalo Hulk that I think we're all in agreement we kind of love.
Yeah.
You could never imagine him looking at the camera and winking. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just so out of place. I mean, just kind of moving on to talk a little bit more about the first third of the movie. There was so much assumed in that you knew why he was there, you knew why he'd run away, you knew what he'd previously done, you knew what had been going on. And it all felt very like how we sort of perceived Spider-Man Homecoming, where there's already been a lot of Spider-Man films recently. Everyone knows Spider-Man's origin story. I feel because it wasn't too long since the last Hulk movie before this, they were clearly trying not to do an origin story, but in hindsight, no one remembers Eric Banner's Hulk.
No,
no one cares about it. And actually going back, you could really use a Hulk origin story.
Yeah, and I feel like at the end of Iron Man, I knew Iron Man. I knew where he was going to be in the Avengers. I knew his kind of, you know, where he was coming from. I knew loads more about the character. I think after the end of watching this film, I have so many more questions about the Hulk. And I have so many more questions about the transition between him and Mark Ruffalo and his position in that film. I feel like I know less.
Yeah.
Than I did with Iron Man, which is a shame. But should we talk about the beginning bit of the film?
Yeah.
Should we talk about the fact that he wants to hide away from the world somewhere safe, so he hides in what is one of the most overpopulated places in the world and chooses one of the most dangerous jobs?
If you were picking the least stressful place to live,
I know.
Where would you go? It's got to be somewhere that you can be hidden and also have low amounts of stress. He's getting stressed walking down the street.
Yeah.
He's getting knocked into it and his heart rate's beeping through the roof.
Yeah.
I think if you've got the Hulk looking under the surface, you need some wide open spaces.
Yeah.
Like, you need, like, you know, if you Hulk out on the 10th floor, you're not going to crush, like, 19 families, like, living below you.
And also you choose a profession where there is not the risk of a major incident.
Yeah.
You know, he could go, like, he's a genius. Like, he can apply, do you know what I mean, he could just do, like, remote webinars on science. I mean, he could live somewhere with a good Wi-Fi connection on an island somewhere.
I guess, though, he doesn't want the military tracking him down. So it has to be a job that's sort of isolated in whatever it was. But again, you know, day laborer. What's the problem? Like, go pick some fruit in Australia. Yeah, fisherman. Perfect.
But I think, looking back, I was wondering when I was watching this, is we saw that there was a lot of Elon Musk influences in Iron Man. I wonder if going back they might have taken more of a, like, Ed Snowden sort of route with the Hulk and him be like this political refugee that no one realizes at any moment is gonna Hulk out and that's it. I think in hindsight they probably would have done something more like that, and that could have been quite interesting if maybe not, it might have been a bit too political for Marvel at the time, but we've certainly seen him go that way with, like, the other Captain America movies. So,
and I thought that his house and where he lived, actually, do you remember when Black Widow goes to recruit him in the Avengers?
Yeah.
And that little girl is kind of weaving throughout that really reminded me of that. Mm. And I know it's not the same physical space or represents the same physical space. I just thought that was a nice touch. And
yeah,
that section at the start of the Avengers I'm putting out now, between where Black Widow is in the hostage situation, and then transition, and then in that same sequence then goes on to recruit the Hulk, is one of my favourite sequences in the whole MCU. And it was just nice to be reminded of that.
And I think the interesting thing about that in particular, so that new introduction to the Hulk, I kind of appreciated where he was living more in that one, because the little girl went there because she was looking for a doctor, someone to help. He'd obviously established himself as someone who could lend a hand, and that made so much more sense to be living near a populated area, because he has that in him that he's a doctor, he wants to help people, so therefore he couldn't bear to isolate himself and not help. Whereas this, he was just hiding, trying to find the cure in the dumbest way possible that I could figure out, using tire as a centrifuge,
and engaging in like online chat with a stranger, which just had so many question marks.
God, we'll talk about Mr. Blue later.
The factory. Can I give you my factory fact?
Yeah. Okay.
Remember the blood incident where the blood falls all the way through? That took one production company a year to make that sequence.
Really?
That CGI sequence of
it
falling down.
Still bad.
I'm very sorry if you're listening to it and you're part of that. But I just love that kind of health and safety message. Like, he was such a big advocate of health and safety, which is quite interesting.
Yeah. I mean, that's right at the same moment where they make it very obvious that the colour green is going to be everywhere in this movie. The opening credits were green.
Yeah.
He's living in this factory, well, living in Brazil and working at this factory where they bottle a drink which is green.
Yeah.
He's like, I swear he's probably wearing green. He's not, but it's just very, throughout the movie,
there's a lot of green.
Everything is green.
Mm.
And it's terrible.
I don't remember in any of the later films Mark Ruffalo or the Hulk making any reference to, like, don't get my blood on me, or, because he's in quite a lot of, fist fights, and he gets injured. And I even thought, even with Black Widow, because she always kind of talks him down when he's been injured or when they're trying to make him back into Bruce Banner.
Yeah,
and there's no reference to the blood, and it was made such a big deal of in this film.
Well, I mean, this is jumping ahead, but the blood, bodily fluids in general. I can only assume that they've just done the leap of, like, that problem's just been fixed, because I think it's sort of assumed that Black Widow and Banner are shagging at some point, and considering he sort of kept that.
Do you think? I don't think that.
Really?
This is a conversation
this is a much later movie.
Age of Ultron.
Yes, that's so far from
scene.
Now. Yeah.
But, I mean, just some final notes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Final notes on the factory.
Yeah.
Is he saves an unnamed lady in the factory.
A lot of makeup for factory work.
She's like oiled up, and it's like her top's open. His top's open a little bit as well, and I get it, it's hot, it's Brazil, you're in a factory. But
the most Brazilian woman.
Yeah.
Like, the most stereotypical Brazilian woman.
It's just, touching on what you were starting to discuss last week, like at this really early stage of the Marvel Universe, it felt very like cookie cutter action movie, male heroes. And, speaking a similar thing about him being a white guy in the middle of Brazil hiding from the US government / army and also SHIELD, you'd think he'd do something with his hair or his beard,
anything.
Or just anything to change how he looked. I mean, he's a doctor, he could probably safely do something with his face to make it look a bit different. It just feels like he went to no effort.
No effort whatsoever.
to hide.
You would just never want to play hide and seek with him, because he'd be so
bad
at it.
So bad at it.
I think he'd be...
He'd be the one hiding behind the curtain where you can see...
I think he would be...
underneath the curtain.
He'd be worse at hide and seek as Bruce Banner. He'd have a better time as the Hulk. He stays hidden when he's the Hulk.
Yeah. True,
he just disappears out to nowhere. But when he's Bruce Banner, he is plain as day wherever he goes.
I think also the other problem with the montage, while you saw that he hurt Betsy Ross in the montage, but it's unclear, did he physically hurt her? Was it just the lab blowing up?
I thought she was dead for loads of the film. Was that the point?
Oh, I think maybe. That's great.
Did Bruce think she was dead?
I don't think... I imagine he would have found out if she had lived or not. Like, okay. He wouldn't have been able to carry on without making sure that she was still
alive. He'd have been in those obit sections. He'd have been like...
He was just looking at that picture of her all the time. Mm. And
oh, he thought it was...
He didn't see her for quite a while. I was just like, is she meant to be dead?
I thought that was a memory of trying to remind him why he's... Because he had it when he was talking to Mr. Blue, and it's like, I'm trying to get back to her. This is why I'm risking sending my blood in the post,
etc. At first, actually, I thought she was Mr. Blue. Like, I thought that he was secretly communicating... Like, he was keeping his identity...
And I wish it had been, because the real Mr. Blue... was a hot mess.
Stern. Why? Anyway.
Moving forward then, right? Stanley drinks the drink, gets some poisoning, figure out he's in Brazil, they locate the factory, they find out exactly where he lives, they go to him.
They
bust a door down.
They
shoot two dogs.
I did quite like that factory fight scene, though. The chasing and the hidden. It was really good.
I was so like that was the moment when I was watching it and the factory scene was happening. I was like, oh, maybe this movie's better than I thought it. Than I remember it being. Mm-hmm. That when they blip thing that there's like that bomb thing that goes off and it's like outlined in the smoke, red and the smoke. And I was like, ooh, that's cool.
Yeah, and then you finally see the whole thing. You see that awful wig that is on top of his head. Just trying to do a Tobey Maguire in his emo phase in Spider-Man. What is that hair?
Apparently, before they cast Ed Norton, they were looking at David Duchovny for the role. And that's his hair. I swear that's just David Duchovny's hair on the Hulk.
They just couldn't be bothered to change the hair.
Yeah, they were just, we've already made the Hulk's hair. So, we can't go back on the hair. The rest of it we can change, but we've already got David's hair in here.
Because I'm not wrong in remembering that, Ruffalo's Hulk has quite a number of his facial elements. Mm.
You could see Mark Ruffalo in Mark Ruffalo's Hulk.
Yeah.
This, neither Ed Norton doesn't look like Bruce Banner. No. The Hulk doesn't look like the Hulk. And Bruce Banner or the Hulk don't look like each other.
I do feel like that about the Hulk in this film and about Edward Norton is that he didn't have much to say. Like there wasn't very many extended pieces of dialogue or conversation which were about him and his journey.
Yeah.
But it was all about turn off your mobile phone, Liv Tyler, they'll be able to track you.
Which is weird because actually he had a huge hand in the script. Yeah. Like he did so much like rewrites and you think he would have done more that would have been in service of his character.
Yeah.
So then he runs. Oh, sorry, were you still?
No, I was just going to say, so then he runs.
Yeah.
and he disappears, and out of nowhere, he's crossed the border into America.
I kind of like that.
I was like, cool.
Can I, this is one of the massive plot points for me. If you're as clever as he is, and we know he's very clever, and you know that you have a tendency to turn green and lose all your belongings, and you're like, why did he not have like a secret bank account? Or like some sort of safety deposit box or something. You know, just walking around in his like shriveled up shorts and jumping into cars.
That kind of scene where he's like finally back in America. Yeah, there's some big unanswered questions. But I quite like the bit where he woke up in the forest and like signals down that truck and he's like, where? And oh, I don't speak Portuguese. And he's like, oh, I'm in Guatemala. And that's sort of the first time you're like, whoa, he actually has like no control.
Hmm.
And then I kind of think, he's super, super smart, and obviously there are a lot of unanswered questions about where he's getting his money from. But that scene where he was, like, begging for money or just, like, completely, completely lost, I would sort of think that maybe a big science-minded guy, there's some academics we work with that you drop him in the jungle. Yeah.
But you know what, there was one bit about this where I actually thought, hey, we've not seen that in the other Marvel movies, and actually I think it's something that's probably been left out, but... You seem to also get the impression that he's been, when he's Bruce Banner, got some sort of gamma poisoning or it's affected him personally as well. Because whenever he's de-hulked, he's like shivering and he's really hurting. And you never really see that with Mark Ruffalo's Hulk. And it might have been something that got resolved, you know, Tony Stark's out of all of this. But it was something that I... really picked up on through the movie, and it was never said out loud, but you kind of feel like he's shivering and he's got rings around his eyes because he's also personally suffering from having a gamma bomb go off in his face.
It's interesting. Did you like that?
I quite liked
it.
Yeah,
I thought it was. I didn't notice it at the time, but yeah, I think that's a really interesting, interesting aspect to that. It isn't just detriment when he is the Hulk, but when he's not as well.
But that's the sort of thing that I thought Ed Norton would have brought to the role.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of thing that you know, like he did in Fight Club, and it's a very similar sort of character. He's got no control of the other side of him, and it's like this sort of the human suffering of it all personally, but it completely misses the other side of it, which is the emotions of him killing loads of people. I've got written down here, Bruce Banner somehow magically found his way back to the US.
17 days it took him to get from Mexico to the US.
Wow.
I'm assuming on... Well,
how?
On foot.
He raised enough money via begging to get back.
Yeah. I think he must have snuck in somewhere. I mean, this was 2008. It was different times.
No wall.
But... Then he starts to track people down, and he ends up in the computer lab, and...
Oh, it's so bad.
There's a great bit here. There's a really cool bit, which is so cool. I thought this was really cool. Is he gets into the computer lab, obviously sees Lou Ferrigno, gives him some pizza. Ferrigno loves pizza. Whatever.
The most, like, ripped security guard.
I love when he stood up and Edward Norton was sort of like, this guy's massive.
I thought that was... It was good. It was a nice touch. Yeah. But he goes into the computer lab, and there's someone in the computer lab. It's Martin Starr. And Martin Starr was in the most recent Spider-Man movie as the teacher.
Oh.
But Martin Starr in that scene is playing a Marvel character called Amadeus Cho. And Amadeus Cho is one of the eighth... He was, depending on which character, I think Reed Richards from Fantastic Four hailed him as the eighth smartest person in the world. Hank Pym, who's Ant-Man historically, when he returns to Earth, says that, no, I'm back on Earth now, so you're ninth or something like that. But Amadeus Cho, now, as of 2015, in the Marvel Universe, is the Hulk. He found a way of taking the Hulk out of Bruce Banner's body, putting it into his own, and he can control when he's the Hulk or not. So he's this super genius that has complete control over the Hulk, and he can just turn into him and be like, I'm the Hulk now, and I'm big and green and really smart.
Unless you offer him pizza, and then he will do whatever you want.
But I mean, you know, this was 2008, so that's something that happened in the Marvel Universe like 8-9 years later, and I thought it was really cool. Looking back on it now, you're like, whoa.
It's a nice Easter egg for fans. But that is quite interesting, and I really do like when they make those nods to the kind of diehard sort of people that have, you know, been a part of this universe for a really long time. But I think this is one of the movies where I did feel that it sort of fell down a bit and between wanting to do service to people who have been a part of this world for a really long time and balancing that with people who are brand new and are never going to read the comics, which is a loss for them, Martin.
Yeah,
but,
mate.
But like this is how they're going to be absorbing their MCU information. I think there was sometimes a little bit too many nods to people that, like, you know what's going on, we're gonna just carry on.
Yeah, and it's a really hard thing to do, I think, balancing those two things. But lots of other films in this series managed to do it, and it's a shame that it didn't happen for Hulk, I think.
Yeah. I think one of the big things that we've completely forgot to talk about, which has appeared twice in this movie so far, up until this point.
Pizza.
Not just pizza, and that did look like a really good pizza.
It really did.
You know, movie pizzas with these, like, American-style Italian boxes.
Is that an authentic...
Like a pizza man in the front.
Yeah.
We saw the one in Iron Man that Obadiah Stane brings in pizza back from New York.
Classic.
And it's in this big box and it's
like a floppy slice.
You can have a slice. It's like, oh God, I could just eat that. And then you see the pizza in this one as well. And I don't know whether you see it other than Amadeus Cho holding it up, but Lou Ferrigno just opens it and goes, like, looks, smiles, nods, and
can
I'm
we
like,
have, can we have best pizza in the MCU?
That's a really good pizza.
Best
so,
lunch.
Ah, wow! I'm a big fan of whatever it is that Bruce Banner is bringing when it comes to pizza. I'm in, but yeah, not pizza. That's only happened. Maybe it's happened twice in the movie, but Liv Tyler.
Oh yeah!
Right. Oh yeah!
Poor Liv.
This is someone who is established as smart. She's established as a doctor. She's established as, you know, very involved with her father, who's part of the military, very involved with Bruce Banner and his work before he left. But the first two times we see her in the movie, she's lying on the floor, presumed dead or severely injured. And then the second time, and all subsequent times after that, in tears and not showing any sort of intellect. With complete fairness to her, it's how she's written, it's not the character. But you see no other signs of her being a somewhat empowered and an intelligent person who can actually impact this situation. Yeah. And I thought that really, really stuck out. I mean, the first proper scene where we get to see her as part of the movie, she's lying in bed in lingerie crying. And it's got the top-down shot of her. She's in tears because Bruce Banner's back. After the scene before being in tears because Bruce Banner's back. And it was like, I don't get, at this point, why she's in the movie. With complete fairness.
Yeah, I love her as an actress. I think she's great. The thing that struck me is, like, I thought there was going to be a point in the film where she wasn't the victim or wasn't the one learning along with the audience. I thought there was going to be a moment where she was going to do something unexpected or, you know something that someone else did or influence someone in a way. And kind of like we got with Pepper Potts. Yeah. Like, she was a bit, she was a personal assistant, but then actually towards the end, she kind of came to the fore, didn't she?
Yeah.
I was expecting that sort of thing to happen with old Liv, but she didn't. She couldn't change her father's mind. No. She couldn't get out of a helicopter which was on fire. She couldn't, she didn't even know to, like, turn her mobile phone off because S.H.I.E.L.D. were tracking her.
Yeah.
I'm just like, what? These are things that people know.
Yeah. I think her only moment of... So there's, again, it's jumping ahead a little bit, but that scene when Stern's trying out the cure and Bruce can't get himself back under control and she just sort of hops up on top of him to be like, slow your roll, calm down. And that really was the only moment where it felt, without her, this could have gone a different way. Whereas in every other scene she's a part of, she has almost no impact. But again, even in that scene, Bruce could have, you know, done that weird breathing technique that he learned and been fine.
And that was an emotional thing she brought to the scene and not an intellectual one, which is such a shame.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it's a shame because I really like Liv Tyler as well. Like, I know she gets like a lot of grief with her, you know, classic kind of breathy way that she talks and everything, but I've always really enjoyed watching her. I quite like her screen presence, which is also why, my God, it was like... What's the opposite of chemistry? It was like a charisma sponge out there. It was unbelievable.
Just awkward. It was so awkward.
So awkward.
And also, like, I just felt like there were so many points where Edward Norton there was just like nothing there. Like, if that you won't like me when I'm hungry translation error, if that had happened in any other Marvel film, that would have got a chuckle, right?
Yeah.
When I watched that, I was just like, what are you doing? This is terrible. If Mark Ruffalo delivered that line, you'd have got some laughs. I got some laughs in this room with that line, and I'm not an actor. But speaking of Liv Tyler and her introduction, can we please, is it finally time to talk about the battle in the university with so many things.
My personal favourite Marvel weapon of all time, right? Forget your Chitauri cannons and all this sort of stuff. Dubstep cannons. Motorized dubstep cannons.
Stark Industry dubstep cannons.
Amazing, right?
I thought they were going to be flamethrowers. I thought, right, we're going to get some fire.
Get rid of your Jericho, get rid of your Iron Man armor, get rid of any of that stuff. War Machine armor, none of that.
Yep.
Motorized dubstep cannons. Literally, if they'd have just had those positioned around New York.
Oh, yeah.
And the Chitauri came down and it was like, blah! They'd have been like, I'm
just pointed
done.
Those straight up at the hole. They could have just kept like blasting them back into space.
Get back to space.
Man, we never see that. I had thought about that. We never see that.
And this is Stark Tech.
It was not good. That moment was not good.
Oh. I thought that moment was incredible. But I just like how Tim Roth survived it. He just rolls out. Like, the Hulk is like, I can't go backwards or forwards or do anything, but Tim Roth is just like, I'm out of here. just rolls away and he's fine.
I did enjoy in that scene, and then in the later scene in New York, I like that the Hulk uses objects.
Yes.
Like, he used that weird sculpture thing in the university, and then later on in the New York, he splits a car in half and uses kind of his boxing gloves. And I quite like that, because that's a little bit of intelligence as well. It's not just using brute force, it's using things to... I did quite like that part of it.
Mm. Yeah, I liked it. I thought, especially at the end when he's got the police car boxing gloves and they get shredded instantly.
Yeah.
I was like, that's pretty cool, actually. But it feels inconsistent with the Hulk that we see in later movies, who I don't feel would use that sort of thing and would just be like, you know.
But that's what you do in the computer games. You dig up, if you play it in Lego, you dig up a bit of the ground and chuck it at people. Still. You also use the Hulk clap, which we need.
Let's definitely talk about that. Oh my god. But
let's not get on a Hulk clap just yet. Because I've got a suspicion that you two were giving each other eyes the other day and be like, that thing in the movie, and when it came up last night and it was Hulk clap, I was like, oh god, I bet that was what we're on about. Because it's just so stupid.
On the money.
Screw it. Let's talk about it now.
Okay.
Because we're on about just fight scenes. Yeah. And I think...
One thing I'm just going to interject quickly, though, about the university. I've got to say, while watching it, even though there were points where it looked dreadful, like the CGI, bold to do a fight broad daylight, with movable kit, like quite a lot of sort of real world objects that you have to interact with. I mean, I did have to re-remind myself that 2008, bright broad daylight shining off that shiny skin that that Hulk's got. But that's one thing I've got to say. I was sort of impressed. They're just like, fuck it, let's just... I'm surprised they said screw it. Let's just do it. Get it out in the daylight.
It was really ripped though. Like, as well, it wasn't like it's just this green object in a green. He was really shredded, and you could see it in that scene.
And did you notice when he was turning into Abomination, did you notice the kind of spray painted on abs that he was getting throughout the...
Yeah.
So that was...
Tim Roth topless.
Do some sit-ups.
Tim Roth topless is one of my least favourite things
in that film really reminded me of the new Wonder Woman. And the villain in that, you don't realise is a villain until the end. What's the character's name?
So Ares is sort of the main...
Ares.
But I can't remember what his, human name is.
And, I felt there was no gravitas or danger because I didn't care about who he was as a human.
Yeah, because I think that is not the arena where Tim Roth, shines. He's good at those, you think about Reservoir Dogs, you think about, that kind of controlled, small intensity that you get from... I mean... big intensity in a small package, what you get from Tim Roth. And I did kind of like that. I wanted so much more about, I think there was one line about him being, can you imagine all my brains in, what I know now, in a body that could do this. And that's the other, I wanted more of that. This whole idea, if they talked a bit more about the super soldier serum, about the, I want to be able to defend my men. Can you imagine an impenetrable soldier? We wouldn't have young men dead on the battlefield.
Or even the complete opposite of absolute anger.
Yeah.
That the Hulk threw him into a tree and basically broke all the bones
but
in
even,
his body.
But even just building up to the... what the frack? You go up to the Hulk and be like, is that all you got? It's like, how did you think that was going to go? Was that supposed to be the serum messing with his mind to give him false confidence?
I just think there's so many villains in the Marvel Universe that Tim Roth could have done a huge thing with, doing a lot of justice, being great, but Abomination is not one of them.
No.
He really reminded me of the sprayed on abs,
which I'm gonna try, by the way.
I've got it. I'm rocking it today. But he really reminded me of Captain America, the start of the first Avenger, when he's weedy. CGI Captain America, and it's like, you get the same thing, and actually there's lots of references later in the movie to, was it the same super soldier serum that was used?
Yeah.
There's lots of hints in the general's office as to the soldier serum, and there's a picture of Captain America in there, and there's lots of talk from Tony Stark as well about, that's why they cancelled it last time, etc. And I feel that it was like, it was kind of mirroring that whole Captain America thing before we even had Captain America. And it probably would have worked a lot better afterwards when you're like, if they could have directly referenced it and been like, ah, Captain America had this Soldier Serum, bam, give it to you. And instead, because it's done incorrectly, he turns into, nod to the camera, wink, it's an abomination! Horrible.
And that kind of, that section, as soon as we get into Mr. Blue's office, apartment, blood supply center.
Blood room!
That whole section of the film literally made me want to stop watching it. Just Mr. Blue's character, the very obvious plot twist that was coming, the Hulk being pinned down to the thing, the creation of Abomination, was just I feel like everyone had checked out.
Yeah.
They were just wanting to get to that final section of the big battle. It was, that whole section for me was just a low point. I literally just wrote, Mr. Blue is a low point. It's just, I can't say anything else about that apart from it's just boring. Yeah. Boring, trope ridden.
And again, like, no, like, how, why does Banner think that this guy could have helped him? He clearly is a psycho.
Yeah.
And also, like, what was that really brief throwaway line about, like, none of the test subjects survived?
Yeah.
Like, when he was like, oh, what do you mean test subjects? And then they take him to, like, the blood repository. And it's like, okay, so there's a lot of blood here. That's distracting. What about those test subjects? Were they, like, dogs? Were they, like, mice? Were they other people? What's going on?
We know
here?
What happened to Stan Lee.
Well, yeah.
I think there's one bit in this movie, actually, that I was starting to get pissed off with. And it changed my mind. I was starting to be like, General Ross is smart.
Supposedly.
Tony Stark is probably somewhere in the background. We don't know about that yet, but we do in hindsight. S.H.I.E.L.D. is definitely involved because they're directly referenced. So you've got a lot of super smart and lots of military-minded people on this thing who have just got no idea that he's in the country.
Mm.
And even earlier in the movie, when General Ross is shown the picture of his daughter, he's like, that's not important. She's out of the picture now. And I was like, how are you not, you're military professionals, how are you not tracking or thinking that he's going to go try and see her?
Yeah.
And I was like, why are you not doing this? Why are you not on top of this? Why is it allowed to freely roam around? And when they were out in broad daylight, and I was like, come on, they're literally in the middle of a street. Bam!
Yeah.
Everyone shows up. And I was like, I got duped. I feel like that was one bit of the movie where I was like, you duped me, you were actually... General Ross is pretty smart.
Mm.
You can't forget that he's still a military man. He's just dealing with something that he's never, ever dealt with before.
Mm.
And I did like that when they show back up. It surprised me because I'd forgotten about it.
Mm.
And it did emphasize that he's not messing with some schmucks here. It's still a professional. It's still a good thing.
But again, I would have liked that to be more present in the film. I'd have liked the idea of regular, everyday people adapting their skill set to a problem they've never faced before, which is the Hulk, which is the emergence of super soldiers and aliens and people with special abilities. Because you see that later in the film, like, one of the most famous lines from the Avengers is something like, this is nothing we were ever trained for.
Mm.
And that thread is really interesting in the better Avengers films. But in this, again, it's like, well, I think that's kind of what they were getting at. But we were never really shown that, which is a shame.
Yeah. And then I think that really comes to the fore in the very final battle scene, where that was the other thing that kind of got to me a bit, is like, I felt that Ross and the kind of other military mites, like, it was almost criminal the way they sent their men into these situations. It's like, I mean, I guess in there's really nothing else you can do. They're the military, you have to send them up, but like, who else are you going to send? But it was like, this is such a bad situation, and oh my god, were there so many people everywhere?
Yeah.
Like, those extras must have cost a fortune, because, like, the streets... I mean, I know it's Harlem, so it's very densely populated and everything, but my god, the Abomination was just throwing people in the air. A lot more straight-up murder, which made even less sense when people all came and crowded around at the end to watch what was happening. Some woman brought her little kid! Like, there was some little kid, like, stood there watching the Hulk, like...
Can we do Hulk clap? Can we all do the Hulk clap? Can you start a small fire for us to put out?
Yeah, and see if we can
do it. 3, 2, 1.
That's That's no not fire. How fire works. You know, this is
it would
one
have made
thing.
It worse.
I don't. I can suspend.
You can spend,
suspend reality, whatever, because it's the Marvel Universe. The superheroes, yeah. The supervillains. There's a big green guy running around.
There's a dubstep cannon.
New York was Tony Stark dubstep cannons and all this sort of stuff. But fire, as far as I'm aware, is no different in the Marvel Universe to how it acts in the normal universe. And
the way they played it is like a big triumphant moment as well.
I clapped the fire out. But the explosion surely would have... The explosion would have done the most damage, not the fire. The fire would just have burnt the bits that remained.
The only thing you could have done is if that clap it completely evacuated the area of oxygen, that would have put out the fire, but it also would have pulled everyone's lungs out of their body. So, you know, weigh
it up. It was like the full stop on that really crappy tagline, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was like the nail in the coffin of the film.
Hope.
It was like, we've messed this whole thing up now. Why don't we just make him clap to put out a fire?
Hulk, clap. It's an iconic line.
Oh, God.
You know, let me run through some of my notes really quick, because some of these really don't warrant talking about. Mr. Blue is also wearing blue. Not surprising. Green, he's wearing green, whatever.
It's
green
not Cluedo. It's not. It doesn't have to be.
This movie is Cluedo. The taxi scene is stupid.
Oh, I kind of like Liv Tyler losing her shit getting out of the taxi.
I love that.
I enjoyed that. I was like, oh, she's doing some acting.
Yeah, proper. I love Liv
it was
Tyler
just
really
stupid.
Angry.
I thought it was just unnecessarily.
Liv Tyler can bring a river from nowhere and sit on a horse and look beautiful.
Yeah.
Why is she not using those capabilities in this film?
Who casually hangs out the back of a helicopter above a city? Having a chit chat.
Yeah.
If I was in that situation, even if it was someone that I loved at the other end jumping out, I'd be clinging on it.
Yeah,
I'd be like, you get back here right now.
Yeah.
I'm not coming out there. So if you fall, this is down to you. But I would be like at the back of the helicopter holding on to something.
I wanted Taxi Liv to come out and be helicopter Liv.
Yeah.
And just like have a go at him like you did.
Liv Tyler shines when she's in vehicles.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Or on horseback.
I've got the hand clap to put out a fire is stupid.
Yeah. Okay, what was your note? Mine said hand clap what?
That's a stupid hand clap.
A stupid hand clap, yeah.
And then, one of my biggest things about this movie, and I just thought it was just crap, was when they tip out all of Liv Tyler, we're just referring to as Liv Tyler. Tip out all of Liv Tyler's belongings, and they're like, "What can we sell?" It's like this necklace, and it's like, but that's, you know, it's special to you, okay? And then they're like, "Okay, we'll sell it, we'll get it back, whatever." 2 minutes later, she's got a little Panasonic camera, and she's like, "I'm like, when do you sell that?" I looked online. I looked online. That camera would have been about $350.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
$350 will get you a boat ride. Yeah, in 2008, I looked up that camera, retail price, new. It was around a similar sort of range of camera, Panasonic Lumix, right?
But then you wouldn't have had the dramatic...
£350.
You wouldn't have the dramatic battery died scene at the end.
Battery is dead. With the picture of him opening it, it beeps in the pocket. Right?
Hey.
Who does that? What is... That is... It really dates the movie, but it's like, why didn't they just sell the camera?
Yeah, good question.
Instead of this emotional necklace, which, looking at it, probably wasn't worth more than $350. It was a sentimental
item. That was an Argos necklace.
Yeah.
But, ending the movie, so it's not a post-credits, it's not a mid-credits, it's a pre-credits.
Pre-credits.
With Tony Stark, General Ross, and he's like, I heard you got a problem. And, you know, I've got not a problem, but I want your problem guy to come hang out with me.
And the dialogue was probably that bad as well.
And, like, Tony Stark walks in like, the baggiest,
honestly,
like, the 90th suit ever. And he's like,
nice
suit, Tony.
When he comes in, it's a silhouette. And he's and it's just like, is that John Travolta? To the door.
Yeah, it's just terrible.
But I gotta say, as soon as, like, Robert Downey Jr. walked into that room, I just realized how devoid the rest of the movie had been of charisma.
Mm.
Like, he just, like,
absolutely.
It was one of my favorite scenes because there was Tony Stark. It's just like, he, you know, touche. Like, you know, just every line he delivers is like, oh, I've missed you so much.
And you know what? There's a little... It's not exactly the same, but it's a little lick of the Avengers theme when he says, like, I'm putting a team together.
Nice.
And it's the same, I think it's the same theme as when you first see the helicarrier in the Avengers movie. And it, like, rises out of the clouds. And it's, like, the same little lick. And I was, like, really stoked at the end of the movie. I'd hated the hour and 40-odd minutes that had just gone before me. And then Tony Stark walks in and is, like, putting a team together. I'm like, he's putting a team together, yo! We're going to watch some movies where he puts a team together. And I think you're exactly right. It was the first time there was charisma in the movie. And in hindsight for me now, I'd have got rid of the Hulk. And I got rid of Iron Man 2, and I'd have just put them together in a movie and established the Hulk that way.
Yeah.
And because we're going to watch Iron Man 2 next, and I'm going to shit all over that as well.
Yeah.
But
I have. Well, are we going to talk about Iron Man 2 now then?
Yeah.
So next is Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
I don't have bad memories of this film.
Any final thoughts on the Hulk?
Never watch this film.
You know, I'm never going to watch it again. But I'm kind of glad that I've watched it. Like, you know, as weird as that sounds, but I am kind of glad that, like, as part of this whole experiment that we're doing, I kind of can see some of what they were trying to do, and you can see how some of the things fits into the later films. Really glad I'd never have to watch it again.
And no matter where, if you have setbacks in life, you can continue to create things of quality, I think is a key message.
Anna, should... I nearly said Iron Man 2 then. Should the Hulk, the Incredible Hulk, stay or go?
I think it should go.
Martin?
It should go.
For me, it's a goner. It's definitely out of there. It's Hulk clapped into oblivion, right? Well, no. So, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Remember, you can follow Anna on social medias at Anna Marvelous.
Anna Marvelous on